So, all right, we've got an hour. Explain this to me.
What do I look like, Lucy?
We got an hour. Explain this to me. Okay, this much we know. Apparently, all we know is apparently. That's great when you start out with something. Brian Colangelo will not be general manager of the Toronto Raptors. Brian Colangelo may, however, be representing the Raptors at the draft lottery tonight, according to Cathal Kelly of the Toronto Star. Brian Colangelo apparently will be, I don't even want to use the word promoted, will be moved into a different position with MLSE that is non-basketball related. And there seems to be some, and Eric, I want to start with you on this. There also seems to be a rumor that he may actually get an extension. So this doesn't seem to me as if, you know, the Raptors are pushing him out of the door completely here.
No, if he gets an extension, then they're definitely not. I can't totally understand it from the standpoint that if you simply want to pick up the option, and then whether you agree or disagree with this new role, whatever it may be, keeping him around, try it out for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Try it out for a few months even. And if by Christmas or the flip of the new calendar year, you realize that this is working out really well, we really like this, this is a perfect fit for him, offer an extension at that point. Add the extra year on at that point. So I don't quite understand why you would go right off the bat with an additional year. The rumor is a two-year deal for him in a position that we don't really know what it is. Thus, if we don't know what it is, even if those obviously within MLSE and those that would be offering the contract and offering the extension and offering this new role, it's a new role. What is it exactly? What is it that you're going to do for the hockey/basketball/condo/restaurant/soccer side of things that you know right off the bat is going to be a success? Test it out for a bit. Kick the tires on it. Pick up the option year and then go from there. So that's where I'm a little bit perplexed by it. I'm not as perplexed that they are keeping him around and sort of shuffling him internally, because I said yesterday to Roger Lajoie when he was hosting the Holiday Show, I think there's a human element to this. No matter what you think of Brian Colangelo out there as a fan, whether you like him or dislike him, what he's done as a general manager of this team or not, I think there's a human element to this for a guy that's been around the city for 3/4 of a decade and the roots that he and his family name and his father have in the NBA in terms of let's take care of him and not just send him off, put him out to pasture. That's just my feeling. Nobody's actually said that to me, but I think that's where a lot of this is playing into why they would pick up the option and keep him around.
You know, Jeff, and just to jump on that, what that Eric said, the Colangelo name is basketball royalty around the NBA. And as Eric said, you don't just shuffle him out the door like that. I'm going to take the human element one side further. Guy's got kids.
Mm.
What, I mean, you talk to people that have had kids that are, you know, we call army brats, right? They move to a different base. The kids pick up and move. I mean, I think about a guy in the NBA like Ray Allen. They've always been on the move. He's been here for 7 years. His kids are in school. Is this the time to uproot them? So maybe he says, you know, and I don't, again, speculating, I don't know this. Maybe he says, I'll take it for a couple of years to get my kids to a point in school where they're okay. And then we can move after that if things don't work out.
See, and I think, Jonesy, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Anybody listening right now, that's not to say that Jonesy or myself or Jeff or anybody else agrees with that that's the best line or the best way to do things. But you can understand where it might be happening or why it might happen. For if the reports are true that maybe it's Larry Tannenbaum that ultimately is trying to, you know, quote unquote, take care of Brian. He's developed a relationship with the guy for 7 years. So that's we can sit here and debate whether it's right or wrong, but I think you can at least understand how something like that might come up and where, isn't again, it, from the human side know, of things.
Isn't that the way the world works, though? Isn't that,
it's
not what you know. At times, it's who you know and who takes care of you.
You know, there's another aspect at work here. If you think back to stories, I want to say it was last year when it was obvious that, well, actually, stories after Richard Petty announced that he was stepping down and after he did step down. Remember how for a while there was a story out there that Brian Burke and Brian Colangelo were kind of angling for the Supremo Sports, whatever, Sports Major Domo job, that the idea was that there would be this Somebody would be hired to oversee all the condos and the business end of things, but there would be a figurehead guy, and that these two guys were fighting for it. You guys know Brian better than I do. Eric and Paul, I'll ask you both. Could this simply be Brian saying, you know what? It might be time to get into a more senior executive role, get my hands involved in the business of running a sports enterprise, because that's the next step for this guy.
I wrote on the Fan website, and yes, it's cheap plug, I guess, but I wrote on the Fan website last night, and I actually called Jonesy and had him read it before I posted and said, what do you think of this? And he said, yeah, you know, it might make sense.
So,
maybe.
So if he goes down, I'm in the sidecar with him. Right?
I wrote it. You just said,
you know what? When in doubt, call the teacher.
Simply make some sense.
I read it as somebody who is, you know, sit back, put your fan hat on, not, you know, like your basketball fan or regular Joe hat on. And it made sense to me.
I'll take it one step further to what you just said, Jeff. He's not only been Brian Colangelo, been rumbled for a couple of years now as a guy that might be perfect for a corporate role, overseeing both sides, overseeing the whole thing, et cetera. He's been rumbled around for a long time as a potential league executive. There have been even people that have linked him over the course of the years saying, this guy could be a commissioner one day. He's got the polish and the pedigree to potentially run the league, or at the very least work for the league. Well, Adam Silver's not going to run the league. He's taken over for David Stern in the year. But might Adam Silver be looking for new league executives? Might he be looking to bring in some fresh blood to the NBA from you know, guys that he's worked alongside with as Stern's right-hand man? But you know what? I want my own guys now. I want some fresh blood. Could this be a way for Colangelo to get away from the X's and O's and the player movement of a job in a corporate role with a franchise overall, not just basketball, which grooms him for a job with the league in a couple of years? Again, this is just my theory.
Sure.
But I think that there's some dots there that you could connect that this might be a nice transition move for him.
Well, people forget, when he was in Phoenix, that was some of the stuff that he was doing. He was connected with the WNBA, with, you know, they had an arena football team, like all of those things. And he was, before his, you know, ascension to GM as the basketball team, he was looking after all that stuff. So this kind of stuff, I don't think is anything too unfamiliar to him. And as you said, it's a move away from the day-to-day with basketball, but still something that he's relatively, I would expect, he's relatively comfortable with.
It's Paul Jones and Eric Smith on the Jeff Blair Show. We are, it's a three-headed, we could call it that, Raptors Roundtable. Eric, we talked a bit before we came in the air, and you made a very good point. We all know that David Stern's fingerprints were all over the move of Brian Colangelo into this franchise. The idea was, basically, save the franchise, but get it on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
Might David Stern have said to the Raptors, "Look, essentially, you know, take care of this guy.
Yeah,
take care of this.
Do what you're gonna do, but take care of him.
Exactly. There's, you know, other stuff's happening. Take care of him, and at least make it look as if he's not being just outright fired."
Well, the organization reached out for help to the league, to David Stern, when they hired Lenny Wilkins. Then David Stern, as you just said, had assistance or offered assistance in the hiring process of Colangelo in the first place. And as we've talked about already in the last couple minutes, and Jonesy just mentioned, the Colangelo name being royalty, one of Stern's probably closest allies and at times one of his biggest foes, Jerry Colangelo. And Jerry Colangelo's role with USA Basketball, you could argue that he has as much power as David Stern in basketball circles in the U.S., if not more.
Well, think about it. When you say that, the NBA going to the World Championships, the Olympics, and after, 2004 in Greece, when they fell on their face with the bronze medal, who comes in to save the day and they haven't lost since?
Yeah.
Jerry Colangelo.
Right.
Right? And don't tell me there isn't a connection there with Stern. Heck, to the point where we were hearing rumblings that what's the franchise that everybody in the NBA loves to love? The New York Knicks, right? And there were rumblings when things were falling apart in New York
that
there was a tap on the shoulder that David Stern, and it was never substantiated, wanted Jerry Colangelo to come in and run the Knicks to make sure this thing got turned around.
Absolutely plausible, and I think probably accurate. Nobody said that Stern would say, don't do this guy like that. Don't just put out to pasture a two-time executive of the year, the son of I believe, a three-time executive of the year, and Jerry Colangelo, a guy that came and did for a couple of years, quote unquote, save your franchise. And yeah, the results have not been there for 4 or 5 years now. But and, you don't know, put them out to pasture.
And people should realize this happens in other sports. I mean, Omar Minaya was New York Mets GM. It happens in other sports where the commissioner's office has an agenda for whatever reason, whether it's a personal liking or in the case of Omar Minaya, I think it was, you know, get a visible minority general manager in a high profile market. It's not the first time it would happen if that's the case. We're joined by Eric Smith and Paul Jones as we mull over what is going on with the Raptors to get you up to date. Reports that there might be an announcement today that Brian Colangelo will be moved into a non-basketball related executive position with MLS. He may or may not get an extension in the process. Now the Toronto Star is reporting that he will represent the team at the draft lottery.
I can verify that in about probably half an hour once my brother gets his sorry butt out of bed in New York, because he's going to be hosting that sucker tonight.
There you go.
So we'll get a link to that one for sure. No.
If that's the case, that would indicate to me that, I don't know what it would indicate. It would indicate that Brian may in fact have an extension in addition to the draft lottery,
you never know. I mean, Dan Gilbert can have his kids up there.
Yeah, that's true.
Just let Jim LaBombard sit there. He's in New York. Let him do it.
I was going to say, yeah, let him sit there with his lucky rabbit's foot and his water buffalo hat on and maybe bring the franchise some luck. Who knows?
What is Brian Colangelo's legacy going to be if, in fact, as you know, the one thing that appears clear is he will not be the general manager of the team and will deal with his possible replacement later on in the hour, but what will his legacy be? You know, to a lot of us, it'll be Andrea Bargnani, and I know that's horribly unfair to the guy, but I think it's what you have in front of you, right?
I think, you know, for some of the fans, the general legacy will be, well, you talk about Bargnani, but on a broader sense, one that was started off great and was tarnished because of moves like Bargnani, 5 years missing the playoffs. And Eric and I have talked about this, and we get the calls on the air in the post game, kind of like Wilner does with the, what do you call it? Radiotherapy.
Yeah. Radio, an hour of radiotherapy.
And I go into my Kelsey Grammer, go ahead, Seattle.
That's right.
But, you know, two different eras, the Bosch era where you have a guy you figure can take you somewhere and you build one way. And then you go into the lottery when it takes, they say on average 7 years to get out. They're what, 3-4 into that now and moving in the right direction. But that 1 year where they finished 40-42, I mean, I draw the comparison to what's happening with the Jays now. The GM goes out and puts everything in place. You had Bosch, you get the best free agent out there, and people might not want to hear that, but at the time there was nobody hotter than Hedo Turkoglu.
Yep.
You go and you get him. You outbid other teams. You beat other people out.
Oh, you orchestrate a crazy 14
crazy
deals
to get him. And you're looking good. You know how you're going to use him. It's all planned out. And then things fall apart. Unfortunately, everybody takes part of the blame. Mm-hmm. But how much are people blaming Alex Anthopoulos this year for what's going on?
Month away from that.
But I'm saying, though, like in December, it was like, hey, where's the parade route, right? Yeah. And not that the Raptors were going to win a championship that year, but they certainly looked like a playoff team. We get people calling us saying, well, you should have traded Bosch at the deadline. Really? At the deadline, they had the best record in franchise history at the All-Star break. Now,
well, in that same year, Jonesy, as well, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, but that year that they missed the playoffs by one game.
Yeah.
They not only had their franchise player sit out the last, what, 3-4 games of the season.
In air quotes, right?
Well, as our guys would say. He had a nose injury that plenty of people put a mask on and play through, but he didn't.
And then he knew he was going to Miami.
Even if you put Chris Bosh aside and forget about that, the team, with or without Bosh, had a opportunity on their home floor against the Chicago Bulls in the second, third last game of the season, win and you're in, lose, and you could still be in, but Chicago's got to win out. Well, the Raptors lost, Chicago won out, the Raptors lost that game that could have sealed their deal and knocked the Bulls out, Toronto misses the playoffs. So when you look at that, and listen, that doesn't erase the last 3 years or even the last 4 years for Brian Colangelo, but that season specifically, to Jonesy's point, he put the pieces together of the players themselves, whether it be the coaches, whether it be the players, that team did not succeed. then late in the season, they're still in an opportunity to get in at the very least to an eighth seed. What does that mean to Brian Colangelo's resume right now, or maybe how things had trickled down from there if they had made the playoffs? If would that have mattered to other free agents, to other moves that might have been made? I highly doubt it would have sealed the deal for Chris Bosh to say, you know what, I'm going to stay. I'm not going to go to Miami. But who knows how things trickle down from there if you actually get into the postseason. And that, to me, you can't pin on the GM. Now, the way the team's unfolded since, sure, you want to blame the GM? Fine. But 3 years in to your franchise guy leaving and rebuilding your team, should you be any further down the path than what they are right now? I don't know. The problem is now you're looking at it cumulatively over 7 years, which is fair, saying five of the seven you've missed, it's time for us to make a decision.
4-19 this year, Jeff. And what did we say? At the beginning of the year, we sat in here and I said, if they were 7-15 after that first,
22 games.
15-22 on the road.
Yep.
I said, if they're 7-15, they're a playoff team. And people, I remember our guy Damian Cox looked at me like I had three heads. I said, if you get 7 or 8 wins, 7-15, 8-14, you're going to be a playoff team. What did they miss by? Three games, four games, right? And so, look, all excuses right now, because the bottom line and the cruel bottom line business that the NBA and pro sports is, you didn't get it done. So to me, his legacy will be one that came in and it was polished. And I think Brian's, and I've always said this, his strength is his weakness. Over 70 players in his 7 years
here?
He
swings.
72 players, 73 players. That's like 10 new guys a year on average.
He's not looking at strike three.
No.
He's swinging.
No, you don't get off the island by taking walks. And 10 guys a year means to me that, and some of those moves in the middle of the season and 10 days and stuff like that, but it means there isn't, to me, enough time to kind of let it sit and let it breathe. And I find it funny now that people are talking about getting rid of Dwayne Casey. It's been a year and a half, a shortened season, and then a full 82. And, do we blow up the coach? And then people want to talk patience. You can't have it both ways.
In hindsight, and I know this is horrible hindsight, but in hindsight, did Brian make a mistake hiring Jay Triano? Because it seems to me...
No, he made a mistake firing Sam Mitchell.
Let me rephrase that. All right, let me rephrase that. In hindsight, should Sam have been given longer?
Yes.
Okay.
No question.
15 games into that year was far too early to fire Sam Mitchell. One game below 500, 15 games in, was far too early.
And a loss at Denver, who... I mean, look at their home record. I mean, there's some ridiculous stat out there that...
But even then, it was 15 games. Was,
yeah, 8-17, 8-9.
Sorry, yeah, it was 8-9, not 7-8. It was 8-9.
And the team, they were still kind of coming together. You're a quarter of the way through the season. So, and I think that was one where there was a working relationship, but both were uneasy with it, which is fine because it takes all kinds. I mean, you don't have to be best of friends. I think they respected one another, but... I just think Brian was more comfortable with somebody else there.
What about Bargnani? How, again, I know I don't want to go back and
hello, my baby.
In retrospect, yeah. But you know, that pick really has hung around like a bad smell, frankly.
Yeah, it has. But, you know, that whole draft year, go and look at that whole draft class.
It wasn't.
The only guy from that draft that you can really sit and cry yourself to sleep over is Rondo, and pretty much three quarters of the league are crying over the fact.
Yeah, if you picked him with that, if you took him with that pick, you would have been
right at the time. There's absolutely no way you're taking Rondo with the number one overall pick. So if you look back and say, you know, would you have been any different, any better right now, 7 years later, with Rudy Gay, LaMarcus Aldridge, Adam Morrison, Tyrus Thomas, Brandon Roy,
I'd
say at least three or four of those names I said, no, you wouldn't be better. And at the time, you're not probably not, again, we're redoing the draft, you're not taking LaMarcus Aldridge because you have Chris Bosh. Mm-hmm. The feeling with Bargnani, at least, was that he does something different than Bosh, and he's not a post guy, and he's going to be the perimeter threat. And listen, he hasn't been an absolute stiff. He's had some moments. But overall, he has not lived up to the cachet of the number one pick. He's not helped this team take that next step, and he's had a very... a hard time staying healthy and being relevant for the last couple of years. And I think that whoever comes in, one of the first moves, and I hate talking fantasy and everything else, but I think one of the first moves might be for the culture of the team overall might be to find a new spot. I think the best thing for Bargnani even may be a fresh start somewhere else.
And I think he's ready for that. Eric, you and I saw his agent in town at the end of the year, and he didn't come out and say it, but you know, my inference, I guess from what he implied, the way he was saying it, Jeff, was I think the kid would welcome a change now.
What does this mean for Dwayne Casey necessarily? See, this one of the things I felt is the longer this goes on, the greater the likelihood that Dwayne is staying. Only because we know that he and George Cope appear to have a pretty good relationship. We know that the, I mean, I like Dwayne. I think a lot of people like Dwayne. But the more this goes on, I kind of get that sense that he might get another shot. Am I misreading it? And he should get another. Let's face it, he should get another shot at this.
Well, I look at, you know, the patience factor that doesn't exist in pro sports anymore. And 23 wins last year in the lockout shortened, 23-43, where he didn't have a lot of talent. And he was able to massage it and win more games in 66 than they won in 82 the year before. Mind you, he didn't play entertaining basketball, but it was kind of playoff style.
It was a culture change that was needed.
Exactly. And then this year, again, we talk about the 4-19 start, being close and not getting there. Do you not give the guy another year?
And I've got to wonder if a new GM comes in, and we'll deal with that in the next segment, who that may be. I looked at this team at the end of the year, and I didn't see a Dwayne Casey team. I don't know. Can Rudy Gay be a Dwayne Casey player?
He's going to have to be.
If Rudy Gay wants to be a better player and take the next step in his career, I think Rudy Gay should want to be more of a Dwayne Casey type player and needs to be, and not just be what he was in Memphis, which was a very good scorer. And I think he needs to be a scorer for the Raptors, but I think he needs to work on his overall game. He needs to work on his body. He needs to be a little bit stronger. He needs to work on the perimeter. I think there's a lot of things that maybe Dwayne Casey could pull out of him. But that said, it's also up to the coach to not just sit back and say, no, this is my style, this is how I coach, and that's it. No, you've got to be willing to adapt, I think, as well, and kind of roll with the punches to a certain extent.
And I think Dwayne Casey tried to do that this year. He talked about trying to be a running team, trying to push the ball, trying to be up-tempo. But it just didn't work, and I think he let go of, I shouldn't say he let go, he moved away from, because he was trying to adapt, change, do something, moved away from the defensive coach that he is. And you could hear that, again, he implied in his postseason newser that, you know, we kind of got away from that, and we're going to go back to that. Mm-hmm. And I've tried a little bit of this, and now I know how to work that, the offensive side of stuff, but we're going to be a defensive team. As for Rudy Gay, all he has to do is look at Memphis, and people have this thing that they're a better team without him. No, they have some players that fit better without him.
Right.
They were good when he was there, and Lionel Hollins didn't want that trade to go down, but it was done, and they got a guy in Tayshaun Prince who is a better fit in a sense. But there's nothing to say that Rudy Gay can't be that guy if he decides he wants to be.
We know for certain Brian Colangelo won't be back. As general manager, 99% of the basketball world appears to think that Masai Ujiri will be his replacement. Of course, the Denver Nuggets general manager, a protege of Brian Colangelo, which, Eric, as you said, kind of raises an interesting point. Might it be possible that this guy who appears to be the favorite candidate has said to MLSE, look, love the idea, but man, I don't want to be the guy replacing the guy who gave me my break.
Well, a week ago, he went out of his way to be sure in his press conference when he was receiving Executive of the Year honors to honor, to appreciate what Brian Colangelo did for him as his friend, as his mentor, and what Wayne Embry did for him as his friend, as another mentor during his days as an assistant in Toronto. Both gentlemen are still employed by the Raptors for at least another month, if not longer. If he's going to come here, and again, this is where I go back to what we said off the very top. Coming at it from, and it's tough sometimes in what we do in sports, finding that human element. I know if it were me, I would have a hard time replacing my mentor, replacing a friend of mine, without saying, listen, especially behind the scenes over beer with one of my good friends or one of my colleagues, listen, I don't really want to do this. I don't want to come in and take your job. But if we can find a way that you're still taking care of, hey, man, if we could even still work together, I would love the opportunity. I'd love to come back. And we all know that things don't look to be going good your way. But you know what? If we can get make sure you're taken care of, I'll come in. I do the job. Then it doesn't look so bad. But, man, I don't want to replace you. I can't do that morally, ethically, whatever. I can't do that to you. Mm-hmm. I'll just stay in Denver then. And again, I might be reading it all wrong, but from a human element, I would have a tough time doing that. So I wonder how much of that could potentially come into play. And again, to then take it that next step further where it's not just Colangelo, it might be Masai saying, we've got another executive of the year, a Hall of Famer, a unbelievably well-respected name in the game and in the history of the game in Wayne Embry. I want him kept around. I want, if I'm going to come to Toronto, I still want him there as a president of the team, perhaps, mm-hmm. or at the very least still in his senior advisor role because he helped me a lot when I was in Toronto, and I want him to continue to help me in coming back to Toronto.
Man, that pigs a position. You know, at that point, and I agree with you, but to a certain degree, but Paul, if you go to the fans and you're bringing a guy in and you're basically saying, you know, the guy that hasn't, you know, that hasn't been able to get you in the playoffs for 5 years, he's staying as a senior advisor. That's not going to go over well.
Well, staying as a senior advisor, but I always took this into account when I was the principal of a school. My school council was advisory.
Yeah.
They could tell me all they want. If it wasn't good for the kids or wasn't good for the school, thank you very much, but we're not doing that.
Yeah, but you know that Tim Leiweke's got to be looking at this and going, geez, if we get off, if I bring Masai in and we're 4-10 and Brian Colangelo's there, you know what the storyline's
going to
be. Well,
but I'm saying, though, to me, do you keep Colangelo in that role? As Eric said, maybe you look after him,
yeah.
but he's not, you know, as all reports that we're hearing, he's
right.
not connected with basketball. He may be an ear for Masai to talk to, but you still have to make your own decision. And let's face it, Masai kind of flew the coop and did pretty mm-hmm. well. And he went back to a place in Denver where he was familiar, and I'm sure he had, you know, people, voices. I wouldn't be surprised if he was still talking to other people around the league. I mean, he was tight with George Karl before. He's tight with Wayne Embry still. Like, what's to say that those people weren't, quote, advising him when he was in Denver and helped him move along to where he is now? So I don't, as long as, you know, the big boss is, if he's not happy with Brian running the team and he's in another part of it, then keep him over there. He can put his 2 cents in. But we may not necessarily take those 2 cents and put him into the pot.
You know, just quickly, Jeff, to that point, this whole time that we've been talking, what is the role exactly? That's what I'm interested in finding out when we ultimately get an announcement, a conference call, whatever, because
food and beverage.
Well,
I mean, really, that's,
but here's the thing. If it's a guy that is more suited for a corporate type role, that's going to be overall MLSC
or
basketball, hockey,
development.
Soccer,
quote unquote,
condos,
business development.
Isn't that Tim Leiweke? Tim Leiweke is coming in to be the grand poobah of soccer, basketball, hockey, condos, restaurants, Maple Leaf Square, everything that he did in L.A. That's what he's there to do. So I'm going to be interested to find out what specifically is the role then on the corporate side that we're all talking about.
You know, Jeff, just thinking back again to just a minute ago when you were talking about Masai coming in, if he were to be the guy and Brian being here. You know, you can also learn what not to do from people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I worked with people in education that I looked and I thought, okay, but that might be effective, but I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my personality. That's not my style. I don't think that's good for people. So you can also learn what not to do. And in an advisory role, you can also say to people, you know what, as you reflect back, because that's the most powerful tool, your own personal reflection. Hey, when I look back, and I do it with people in education now, even though I'm out of it now, and I have been for a little while. Yeah, you know what? I tried that. It doesn't go over so well. Here are the pitfalls with it. So if you're thinking about that, you might want to stay away from it. And that's, you know, that's the other side of the advisory capacity that people don't look at. They always look at, well, Blair told me to do this, so I did it.
Right.
Well, Blair can also say, Jonesy, don't do that.
Right.
Don't do that. That ain't working.
Why? I know he's NBA Executive of the Year. And everybody seems to think this is the right choice. Why would, if this is the way it goes, why should Toronto fans look at hiring Masai Ujiri as being, you know, that's the answer?
Because I think it brings some continuity and stability in terms of a guy who is at least familiar with stuff here and seeing it improve a little bit. Mm-hmm. And again, he can talk to people around and move it forward. Jeff, we all know that there's an implementation dip. When you change things, they get better before they get worse before they get better. And you bring a new GM in, and it may yet be the case, and he has to put all the, quote, right people in place. So new scouts, new assistant GMs, new coach, change the playing style, change the players. I don't know if you're moving forward from where you are. And you look at all those graphs in business about how things improve, and then they make a change, and it dips. And yeah, it may eventually go past where you started, but you dip. And then look at the bottom part of the graph. What happens to the employees? Things go down. They just start to get it. Things start to come back up. And then the change is made and boom, it goes down. And the two parts of the graph are going in opposite directions. Mm-hmm. And that might yet happen here in Toronto. But I think there's less of a chance of that happening if a guy who comes in is at least familiar with what's going on.
What's his philosophy as far as building a team goes? We know that. I mean, we've seen it in Denver, but
he's moved away from the big international.
Okay, yeah.
And I know that from watching. You look at the moves he's made, he's moved away from that and more towards the, quote, American-style game.
Mm-hmm. And outside of that, I don't know if we know, because his biggest move that impacted the team clearly was the trading of Carmelo Anthony and orchestrating that deal. And to his credit, he pulled off a very good deal. And has a lot of young athletic pieces. And, you know, he orchestrated the JaVale McGee deal as well, which at the time, some people felt was not a fantastic trade because you were giving up Nene, who was arguably a better player. But it made sense maybe from a depth standpoint, from a financial standpoint. So I think he's been able to get bang for his buck in a short time in terms of the players that he was able to acquire. But I don't know if we truly know, after only a couple years on the job, what his ultimate style and his philosophy is.
You know, you guys both, in addition to doing play-by-play, you guys talk to the fans after games. And the fans are going to be sitting. I mean, we talk this through, but, you know, there are a lot of people who are going to be looking at it from a little bit farther distance, and they're just going to be saying, oh, Colangelo is always getting fired. Well, he's not getting fired. What the hell? Jeez. What does the fan base need to see, Paul and Eric? What do they need to see by the time training camp rolls around? You know, blue sky scenario.
I personally don't know that it matters.
Okay.
If Brian Colangelo is still around, if he's not in charge of basketball. I'm saying from a fan standpoint. If there's a fan listening around that says, why even keep him? Why is he there? Listen, if it turns out that it's a corporate role and he's not connected to basketball and you're hiring a new guy, then worry about the new guy. Don't worry whether Brian Colangelo is still there or not. But who is that guy and what direction is he taking your team in? And I think there would be a certain sense of, dare I say, optimism, or at least being okay with the decision if it's a guy like Masai who has ties to the city and also is coming off high honors as executive of the year. I think clearly a lot of people got wrapped up in the sort of fever of the moment when Phil Jackson's name was floated out there initially by the initial reports. But I think that the issue that I think folks have to be realistic about as well, and Jones, we've talked about this a number of times, is this is not a destination at this point because of the fact that they've missed the playoffs five times in 18 years. So you've got to be realistic about the types of candidates that you're attracting right now as well, unless you are vastly overpaying and backing up the Brinks truck in order to get those guys. Because I think, much like the players, winning cures all. You're going to have to win and be a proven winner before you're considered a hot job around the league.
Regardless of who the guy is, and, you know, we're talking about Masai. I mean, who knows? I mean, do they kind of put Ed Stefanski in for a year? I mean, regardless of who it is. I mean, there's a guy who, you know, his name seems to be, wasn't he brought here to be kind of Brian's successor in the event that something happened, who built a pretty good team in Philly?
Mm-hmm.
The Nets, who were in the NBA championship, you know, NBA finals twice. I mean, like, you look at a guy like that, regardless of who it is. A couple of moves have to be made, and all this stuff moves to the side. All this front office stuff moves to the side because of what happens on the court. If the coach is back, there's a couple of tweaks in the roster, and they play at the one game above 500 pace that they did to end the year, I think there's reason for optimism.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, players, the players are, it's kind of funny because Eric and I see the players and they ask us, hey, what's going on with this? They're asking us, mm-hmm. you know, oh, did you, I remember the day that Juan Dixon was traded. Remember that, E? The day we're going up the steps of the plane and one of the players turns to us and says, Juan's not here. Has he been traded? Yeah, that's what we hear. Really? I mean, they're asking us. And I guess the bottom line, and you know this, Jeff, you're in baseball clubhouses where there's tons of guys. They don't really care about what's happening up in the top office.
They care what's happening
on the field.
Yeah.
And if the players are okay with the guys that they see in the locker room and what's going on, they'll win in spite of all the other stuff. So I think the key is get a guy in place, put a team together, make a couple of moves, and then let the players worry about the rest. And that's what the fans should be concentrating on.
30 seconds.
Just very quickly, I would say if we go back to if Masai Ujiri ends up being the guy, one thing I've said for a long time is finding someone that understands the complexities of this market as well, I think is key. To just go pluck a guy right now from Oklahoma City or from Washington or whatever else, they might be very good basketball minds. And if it turns out that those are the guys, great. They know the X's and O's. They know how to build teams. They're getting a chance. But being the lone Canadian market, I think, does count for something. And if you've got somebody established that has been around here that knows this market and the issues, both pro and con, that come with being this lone team and running a team in this city, I think that's actually a plus, which is another reason why I would put Masai towards the top of my list, if not at the top of my list, because he has an appreciation and understanding of what it means to run this franchise, not the other 29.